Sometimes modern medicine can only go so far, and stands baffled in the face of new syndromes and diseases. It's the case with autism, a condition that affects 1 in 100 children today. There is no known cure. Rupert Isaacson tried everything to help his autistic son.
We were losing him. We tried every form of Western medication we could. Behavioral analysis, pills, creams, diets. But he still didn't speak to us. Spent hours lining up objects obsessively. Was completely isolated from other kids. And his tantrums were getting worse and worse. But then, something extraordinary happened.
Rupert Isaacson discovered his son had a special bond with horses. The calming effect was so startling that Isaacson decided to take his family to Mongolia, the one country that combines shamanic healing and horses, to seek out help for his son, Rowan. He wrote about the experience in his book, The Horse Boy, which is also the title of a documentary chronicling the trip. Isaacson says Rowan's first experience with a horse was unforgettable.
I assumed, because of his erratic behavior, his tantrums and so on, that he was unsafe around horses. So I actually stopped riding. I stopped owning horses. And for me, that's not a good thing. I start to get a bit depressed if I'm not around horses. But I thought that was the responsible thing to do. He took himself into my neighbor's horse pasture and chucked himself at the feet of his boss mare. All horse herds have an alpha or a boss, you know, of the herd. In this case, it's a female called Betsy. And he literally just sort of threw himself on the ground at her feet. And I thought, oh, you know, he's going to get trampled. And I was actually creeping up trying to grab him, you know, through the fence to pull him away. But he didn't get trampled. In fact, something extraordinary happened. She bent her head and half closed her eye and began to lick and chew. And if you are a trained horse trainer, if you're a trained horseman, you know what that behavior means. It's like a dog showing its belly. It means I submit to you, you're the alpha.
It's nice to know that the story is going to have a fairly positive ending, but I'm curious about this moment because it was hope for you. Clearly this was something that you hadn't experienced before, but it's not a cure. And taking him away from Betsy, you didn't experience a complete change in behavior.
No, but what I did experience was when I asked him, because he went to Betsy 2 or 3 times. You know, it took that for me to be convinced that this was something I should pursue. And then I said to him, almost rhetorically, you know, do you want to get up? And he said, up. Now, he had what you call echolalia, in that a lot of autistic kids will repeat words that they hear, particularly the last thing that's said, but it doesn't mean they understand it at all. And I thought, well, is this echolalia or what? So I put a saddle on her and I climbed up and put him up and climbed up behind him. And then again, rather rhetorically, just said, well, you know, where do you want to go? Do you want to go to the woods or the pond? He said, to the pond. And again, that's classic echolalia because repeat the last thing said, okay, but this is something. So I rode down to the pond and this big heron got up and flapped away. And he said, heron. I didn't know he knew that word. And that's when the door opened.
Yeah. Now, this is all wonderful. And you then made what seems to an outsider an extraordinary decision to take him beyond this to a place in the world where horses are very important, to Mongolia. But that, from Texas to Mongolia, that's a big, a big move.
Yes. It happened actually with its own weird logic, but you have to understand a bit more about my family background. I sound British, but I'm British South African. All my family in South Africa is very, very diverse. Not all my family is white. And my non-white family is related by marriage, if you can get this around your head, to the last group of Bushmen hunter-gatherers that still live in South Africa. They're called the Klamani Bushmen. And I actually wrote a book about this called The Healing Land. Their culture is entirely based around healing through the use of trance. And I was familiar with this. I'd seen it at work through the course of my life many times. That wasn't a huge mental leap for me. But the year that Rowan was diagnosed, and the same year that he met Betsy, I had to bring a delegation of Bushmen hunter-gatherers over to the USA to go to the United Nations. I'm a human rights worker and a journalist, as well as an autism dad. And they were losing their land to make way for diamond mines. We brought them here to make a protest and kick them off on a land claim. Some of the guys who were on the delegation were trained healers in their culture, and they offered very casually to, in inverted commas, work on Rowan a little bit. I said, sure, why not? You know, I mean, the worst thing that could happen is nothing, right? Because it's a bit of song and it's a bit of prayer. You know, there's nothing that could hurt the child. And to my amazement, for the 4 days that they were with him, it was tantalizingly like having a normal toddler. A lot of his obsessive behaviors went away. When the Bushman went home, Rowan fell back into the profundity of his symptoms again. But I couldn't help but notice, okay, he's had this radical and positive reaction to the horse. He's had this radical and positive reaction to these healers. I'm trying many other therapies, and they don't really seem to be getting anywhere. In fact, his speech therapist had given up on him more or less the week that he found Betsy. So I thought, what would happen if I took him to a place that combined these two things, horses and healing? Because I could go to Africa tomorrow, but that's not a horse culture.
Yeah. Well, I can understand how you would be enthusiastic about the idea, given your background. Still, it seems like a big step. One day you are having difficulty getting through the day with a child who has severe behavior problems. The yeah. next day you are on a plane flying, well, from Western notions to Outer Mongolia to the other side of the earth.
Yes, I know. The thing was, it was an absolute gut feeling. And I think there was something else at work as well, which was that there was this sense I had. When we first got the diagnosis, most of the professionals that we spoke to, with the best of intentions, basically told us our lives are over. You know, they said, you're going to have to live your life according to a schedule on a fridge. And there will be no travel, there will be no adventure, there will be none of these things, you know, and you just have to accept this. And that's not practical for me, because that's how I make my living. And also, it's not practical for us as a family.
Yeah.
So I thought, hold on, maybe they've got this backwards. What if the autism, instead of being this massive problem to be fixed, instead of shutting life down, what if this autism is the gateway to the greatest adventure of our lives? What if this is the gateway to the most beautiful adventure of our lives? Who's to say that can't be true?
So you go off to the other side of the world. When you got there, it looked, frankly, it looked like the backside of Chicago in the film.
You must have
thought, oh my heavens, we've made a mistake.
Well, I thought that many times in the course of the journey. I mean, I think that many times in the course of my average day. You know, I mean, let's face it, life is not a precise science, is it? Yeah, when we got there, it was sort of, because we arrived in the city, of course, and the city is like this post-Soviet slum. However, as soon as you leave the city, there's no like suburb, there's no sort of zone of farmland before you hit the steppe. It's like the steppe and the wild mountain comes right up to the city, so you're in one or the other.
Is he gonna whip me?
Yours?
Yeah, a little bit. Sir.
You cannot scream.
But you know, your wife wasn't enthusiastic about this. And then the next thing we see in the documentary is you with a bunch of shamans who are beating you.
I know, terrible. And I had no preparation for this because with the Bushmen, I mean, I've seen, I don't know how many healings with the Bushmen in Africa. Their way of healing involves no use of whips and things like that. I wasn't expecting to get whipped. I got
And this
whipped.
Was not lightly whipping either. You had
no,
welts.
They left welts on me and Kristen. I know, I thought she was going to divorce me. But it was funny. There was no sense during the course of this that they had anything but our best interests at heart. It's a difficult thing to explain, but there was no sense of, oh gosh, these people are taking us for a ride, or they just want to hurt us. Or No, you could tell that these people were doing everything in their power to help us.
And you know, began to see signs of change.
We did. I mean, in that first ritual, that first ceremony that you described, Rowan turned to this little 6-year-old boy who was part of the groups of families that were there and opened his arms and hugged him and said, Mongolian brother. And he had never done anything like this before. I mean, the most he'd ever done was what you call parallel play, which is where you ignore another child that's in the same room with you, basically. So that child, it was our guide's son. He was called Tomo. And our guide, Tulga, said, why don't we bring Tomo on the trip with us? Because clearly there's something happening here. So in the middle of the first ceremony, we saw a major, major change. And then we got all the way across Mongolia with various mishaps and ended up in southern Siberia, where the reindeer people live.
There they are. How about that? They're teepees and satellite dish.
Oh, my God. It's the reindeer people's teepees. Look, that's where they are. You made it. You made it all the way. You made it all the way. I am so proud of you.
Do you want to ride a reindeer?
We do want to ride a reindeer, yes.
There, Shaman, a guy called Ghost, worked on Rowan for 3 days. And at the end of the 3 days, he said, okay, Rowan's going to get gradually less autistic until he's 9. And by 9, you should be seeing him fairly normal. However, the stuff that really drives you crazy, remember Rowan's 5 at this point, the stuff that really drives you crazy, the incontinence and the tantruming, these will stop like now. And
you must have not quite believed.
Yeah, even with the Bushmen, I have seen really effective healings take place of really severe conditions, but you don't normally see the symptoms go away immediately. It's normally a pretty gradual thing. It's rare to have a shaman say something that unequivocal, and I was guarding my heart. My heart was already broken. You know, I didn't want further disappointment. But 24 or so hours later, we were camped by the river at the bottom of the mountain, and Rowan did his first intentional poo and cleaned himself. And we counted from that point to when we got back to our house in Texas, which took about 3 weeks, we counted 6 tantrums of any note. Normally, that would have been a day's worth or half a day's worth. And by 3 or 4 weeks, they were gone. They had just stopped happening.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Rowan. Happy birthday to you.
Did Rowan get cured of his autism? No. Rowan is still autistic. Did Rowan get healed of the dysfunctions that went along with his autism? The physical and emotional incontinence, the inconsolable tantrums, the isolation from his peers? Yes. For us, this healing was frankly miraculous. But perhaps the real miracle was that we went to Mongolia with a child suffering and a family suffering, and we found healing through whatever means. The bottom line is that we took the adventure, and through that adventure, we found a way, both as individuals and as a family, to break free.
Rupert Isaacson is a journalist and author of the book The Horse Boy. He lives in Austin, Texas.